Tonight, James dry fires without lubrication, Mike shoots himself in the leg, and we download apps for Lucas. And this is Couch Potato Mike, who has just freshly given up on trying to change the oil in my own car.
You quitter.
I didn't have the right tools.
Yeah. We have the right tools. You were trying to get the right tools right as we were trying to do a podcast interview, which was just bad timing.
Fuck it, I can just get a dude to change it for $10 anyway, and I'll fucking know what to do next time after I get the right tools. But I need my oil changed.
Yeah. I still think we can do it, but... What do we have coming up today, Mike?
I've got to go swing a pickaxe after we get done with this, because I got to break some concrete.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean on the show here?
On the show, yes.
Oh, yeah. We've got an interview coming up.
Yes, we do. I think I mentioned on the podcast that I stumbled across Lucas App from a forum that was a business forum, the Road to 100K, started by Jack Spirico, started by Jack Spirico, which has, it's dead, the forum no one uses it anymore, and Lucas from Triumph Tactical was the last person to post on it, and just out of curiosity, like, when I see that, like, if I see that people have websites, I'll go check them out and see what they're doing, see if they're still doing stuff, try to reach out and, make friends, like I did with Jeff Dimitri, when I was like, Jeff, I want to be a guest on your show. He's like, hey, use James. Fuck off, man. I don't know how to have the guest. And I was like, well, fine then. And then like a year later, Jeff's like, well, I like what you're doing, buddy. And then we became the second best friends ever. Catch Tail Mike is number one.
Damn straight.
Anyway, Lucas, who started his website, Triangle Tactical, in 2012, is still active. And he's pumping out podcasts like a son motherfucker. 500 something between the two podcasts he does?
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's a lot.
So, good job on him. I love when people keep doing stuff. Like, consistency is the biggest thing on the internet.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, yeah. And there's a lot of quitters out there as far as podcasts go.
Oh, my God. Dude, I had to go through, so I have this resource feature on my website, and I have the blog role. Like, I have resources of, like, websites that I link to that are, friends of mine and things that I think are cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the blog role, which is on the main homepage. I had to go through recently and just, like, wholesale start getting rid of websites because they don't exist anymore. Sadly, like, some of my best friends that started websites, they're all, I'm the last person, like, still living.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like,
seriously?
I had to remove the link to Pork Therapy because that podcast is no longer there. Stephanie now does something different.
Oh, seriously? Yeah. That was your first interview?
It was my first interview. I think I host the audio file myself on the website so you can listen to it.
I still love that interview.
The Greens website is down.
Again. Yeah, I know. I miss the Greens.
Me too.
But I hear they're back together.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't. Don't know about that.
Andrea keeps track of it.
Yeah.
Producer Mike's wife to our listeners.
I need to get those audio files and host them on our website because Survival Punk will have like one person that reads it and I'll still keep making it. Like, for you, one motherfucker. I will keep making it.
Watch it be Daniel Tosh. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like the last guy.
I love this. Like, one guy in the audience is like, that's the best joke ever. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It is the best joke ever.
But unfortunately, we've got an interview to do. Well, fortunately, not unfortunately.
Definitely fortunately.
We have an interview to do, and that means handing it over to our tame survival guest. Some say he once fired 28 consecutive rounds without reloading out of a Derringer. And that for some reason he thinks all of North Carolina is in the shape of a triangle. All we know is, he's called Jacob Apps.
Or technically Lucas. Lucas Apps.
Jacob Lucas.
With great pleasure today, I welcome on Lucas App from Triangle Tactical. Lucas, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. It's good to connect with other people, and I haven't done a tactical shooting show in forever. So I was like, I have to find someone to talk to about this.
I hope I don't disappoint, because I'm probably the least tactical guy that runs a tactical blog. So.
Oh no!
I'll do the best I can.
Oh, that's perfect then, because I'm the least survivally guy to run a survival podcast, so that works out perfect.
Yeah, Mike's our average Joe guy on the show to bounce, because you know I would just talk and people would be like, what is he talking about? Like, I don't get it. And Mike's like, dude, what are you talking about? I'm like, okay, let me explain it.
Yeah, that's so, why I'm Couch Potato Mike.
Yeah. For those of our listeners that don't know, who is Lucas Apps, and how did you get started in tactical shooting?
So I kind of came into it in, I don't know, I guess a fairly normal way was at the time my wife and I were living in just a really like shady apartment complex, and I figured like I should have a gun.
Yeah.
And so I bought a Remington 870 shotgun off a friend of mine for like $150, and I was like, well, now I have this gun. I should go like shoot some sporting clays or something with it. That sounds fun. And so I started doing that, and I thought, well, this is pretty cool. I want a pistol. And so I bought a pistol, and I was like totally hooked into the pistol thing. And I go to the range one night to go shoot, and they're like, hey man, sorry, the range is closed right now, 'cause we're going to have this competition. But if you want to stick around and shoot the competition, you should do that. And I was like, I don't know anything about competition, but sure, what the heck? And I shot my first competition that night, and I did well. And the rest is kind of history, man. Like I got super hooked into competitive shooting and the aspect of really trying to master a pistol. And that's kind of what I've been doing for the last 6 years. And, you know, Triangle Tactical, the blog and the podcast has spawned from that. And that's kind of where we are now.
Sweet. I've shot IDPA once, and it was definitely fun. I can see how someone would get addicted to it.
Oh, yeah.
You just told us how you got started, but how do people get started in tactical shooting? Like, what's a good way to get into it?
You just got to go. Just look up where there are some matches or something in your area. Like I'm a through and through competitive shooter. And I think that it'll make you a much better shooter than just going to the range ever will. You'll be asked to do things that you've never even thought of doing before. And really the biggest thing that I've found is to get people out to shoot, you just have to get them to go. And you know, there's a lot of excuses that I hear every single day. But like, well, I need more practice. No, you don't. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. Yes, you are. I'm not going to be competitive. Correct. You're not. Once you get out there and you see what is actually possible for someone to do who is a really good shooter, what is actually physically possible for them to do with it, it's mind blowing. And it's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, you'll definitely like, if you go with the mindset of trying to compete with other people, you're screwed. Like I remember, you know, like when I shot, you know, you had your pros there that, you know, they had their tactical vest that concealed their, you know, their pistol, and they're really fast and they're really accurate. And if you try to compete with them, it's just not going to happen. Like you just need to like go out there and just do your best. Like don't even try to go fast, you know, just like be safe and then be accurate.
Yeah. Right? Your first couple of matches, your goal should be, don't point your gun at anybody and don't get disqualified. Yeah. and shoot all the targets. Like that should be your goal. Speed should have nothing to do with any of it.
Yeah.
You know, what are some of the best practices for competitive shooting?
Like how to practice for competitive shooting?
Like just what are best practices to keep in mind as a new shooter? As a new competitive shooter.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is before you go out, have at least an idea of what the safety rules are. So depending on which match you're going to go to. So around here, generally we shoot IDPA, which is the International Defensive Pistol Association, which is kind of a more of a concealed carry type sport. And then you have USPSA, which is the United States Practical Shooting Association. And that is just straight up racing with guns. And it is so much fun. Mm. But the rules, depending on which range you're at and which game you're shooting, as far as safety, are, might be a little bit different. And so sometimes what you'll have is like a new shooter will show up to the match and like they get out the car and they're just like waving the pistol around, putting it in the holster. And unfortunately, that's going to be a disqualification at most games. So most ranges have like a safety area where you're allowed to handle the gun, but not allowed to handle ammo. And then, you know, you can never take the gun out of the holster until you're told to. And pretty much everybody runs a cold range all the time. So your gun has to be empty until, you know, you're told that you can load it up by the range officer and stuff. So just having an idea of the basic safety rules is generally going to be the biggest thing.
Yeah. The when I did go, I had a friend that was going to, we were going to shoot together, both for our first time. I went and read the rules very well, and he did not. And we both have our concealed carry permits. And when I got, so I carried to the range, but before I got out of the car, I removed my firearm from the, from my holster, and then I put it in the case and, you know, took it inside. He carried into, you know, the meeting room where the, where it was at. And, he was just disqualified. Like he couldn't shoot that night. Like he stuck around and watched. I didn't read well enough, and I think I left my magazine loaded, and they were like, okay, we should disqualify you, but we won't. Like, you just go back here to the safe area and just, you know, remove it from your magazine. So luckily I didn't get disqualified. Yeah. But yeah, definitely finding out what the rules are at the range that you're going to shoot at so you don't get disqualified. I mean, just, you know, it's not fun.
Yeah, cause, and I've seen a lot of dudes come out and, you know, they come to their first match. They're all amped up and excited, and they get, yeah, and they get disqualified for something. And like they never come back, and that sucks. So,
I know guys that would be that way.
Yeah, I understand. Like the range officers, I mean, you want this to be safe. Like you don't want people being shot at IDPA or any of these shooting matches, because it's just going to ruin the sport for everybody. But I can see how you want to encourage new shooters, and like some of the strict disqualifications. You know, it's like on my friend, like they, I felt that they should have let him shoot anyway, probably, because I don't know if he ever shot again. So you know, that's
depending on the rules of the match. If you show up with a hot gun, I think in USPSA there's actually a provision that if you show up loaded, you can actually go to the match director and say, "Hey, I have a loaded gun on my hip. Can you take me downrange and unload me?" And that is in the rule book, and they can provide a place for you to unload. So that is a thing. And as long as you're not handling it, the minute you handle it, you know, outside of a range officer's discretion, or you're going to go home. So,
yeah. Yeah. It was, I think they're in like, cause they had like a pre-shooting briefing, like in the meeting room. And they're like, "Does anyone have, you know, a loaded weapon like on your person?" And he was like, "Yeah, I do." They're like, "Disqualified."
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so, I don't like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it sucked for him.
And that kind of fucking hardcore rule, pardon my language, but that kind of fucking hardcore rule, I mean, that would just totally discourage me or a new person that. I mean, it's either black or white, you know, like give somebody, you know, like an ounce of slack. They were honest enough to tell you. Plus, that encourages people to be completely dishonest about it.
I have never seen someone get disqualified for that at a match like that. Like I go to IDPA matches around here, and they frequently ask that same question. Is anybody new? Yeah. Everybody new, raise your hand. Does anybody have a loaded gun? And if their hands go up, they walk them down range. They unload them, explain to them the rules, and we go on and have fun and shoot stuff.
Yeah.
That's the way you do it.
Yeah.
That's the way you do it. And you make sure that, you know, look, there's rules. Obey the rules, you know. But you know that what you said happened. Yeah, that would just encourage people to like
not come back
completely, either not come back or completely lie about it. And then you got a bunch of assholes with loaded concealed weapons walking in the fucking door. It just takes one of those jackasses to make the news.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they would have been disqualified as soon as they did find out. But
yeah, but if somebody's that dishonest about it, what else are they going to be dishonest about?
Yeah.
2017.
So, what is What is some gear you need for your first shooting match?
Yeah, say I'm going to start. What would I need?
Not a lot. So I generally encourage people not to go buy a bunch of stuff, because chances are if you go out and buy a bunch of stuff, you're going to buy the wrong stuff, because you're not into the competitive shooting game, right? So basically you're going to need a pistol, and for most games, pretty much any pistol will do. As long as it works, you know how to work it, you can clear a malfunction, you know how to work all the controls and stuff. A holster, just a regular belt-mounted Kydex holster works great. And it needs to be loose enough that you can draw it with one hand, and that you can reholster it with one hand without pointing it at yourself, is going to be kind of the basic rules there. And I think that should pretty much be the basic rules for any holster anyone uses for any reason ever. So pretty much any holster should work. I generally tell people to stay away from the little nylon gun show holsters, I call them.
Yeah.
You know the ones. They're like nylon. They've got the snap over the top, and sometimes they have a magazine pouch on the front of the holster, which doesn't make any sense because then the magazine pouch is on the wrong side. How do you get the magazine out of it? Switch your gun to the other hand. I don't know. So basically, regular kind of holster. There's some really inexpensive options out there. I generally tell people to stay away from the Blackhawk Serpa because some ranges don't allow them. So you can, whether you think they're dangerous or not, I tend to lead towards the side that they are a little dangerous, but even if you don't think they are, just know some ranges don't allow them, and it would really suck to show up and have them be like, hey, sorry, bro, that's not allowed here. So
what is it about the Blackhawk Serpa that they don't actually like? Because that's, I'm not.
You have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask you. Good job.
So the Serpa uses, it's a retention holster, and it uses a button on the holster that you push in with your trigger finger. And it, mm-hmm. and it allows the gun to be drawn from the holster. And the thought is that when you are under stress, people push the button, maybe they don't hit it quite enough, and then they push
that's a great way to shoot yourself in the leg.
Yeah, well, yeah. So they push the gun back down in the holster, they mash the button down, they rip the gun out, finger hits the trigger, gun goes bang. And I can say this, I've been shooting competitively for 6 years. As of probably this week, I have seen 4 people in 6 years have their gun go off during their draw stroke.
All four
of them were using Serpa holsters. So that is my anecdotal evidence there. So, but just kind of a basic holster is good to get started with. And then, maybe a magazine pouch or 2 or 3, depending on what kind of game you're going to go shoot. So IDPA, 2 magazine pouches, or 1 double pouch is fine. USPSA, depending on what division you're going to shoot, you may want up to 5, but 3 will get you started.
Yeah. I've never liked the Serpa design. I didn't even know about the, tendency to shoot yourself. I was just thinking, I really don't want to have to think about pushing a button when my life's in danger. I don't want to reach down there and be like, okay, push the button in the correct way. Now draw. I don't want that.
That's definitely an extra step you do not need in a stressful moment.
I mean, there are some other brands of retention holsters out there that work really well. Safariland has one called the ALS, and it's got a thumb lever, but it's very natural on the draw stroke. And it doesn't slow you down at all. And honestly, if you look at most any police officer, most places, they're going to be using a Safariland ALS, which is a really high quality, nice holster.
Yeah. I would also add that, I have some tactical shooting buddies that yelled at me when I first started carrying, cause I had a universal holster, a crappy nylon, inside the waist belt, universal holster that did not. There was no, it kind of flopped around, and when you drew, sometimes it would just, come up out, and it would, if you don't, Kydex will hold its shape, so you can put back in the holster.
Right.
These floppy universal nylons, you can't, you can't.
You might as well keep your gun in a fanny pack.
Well, they have those, yeah. Uncle Mike's fanny packs or something, yeah. I wouldn't suggest those either, but yeah, crappy. If your holster says universal, probably not the best, I have a crossbreed super tuck, super happy with it. And I'm a lefty, so I had to find one for the left-hand side.
which was kind of annoying. But I was real happy with that. Like, I was wearing like tight, like fitting shirts, and you could not tell I was carrying with it. So
yeah, I've had a Super Tuck, the horsehide one, for like 5 or 6 years now. It's a fantastic holster.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm super happy with it.
Yeah. I'll be honest, between the two of you, I feel like the fifth wheel on a tricycle. Cause the only gun I own is a Red Ryder BB gun.
Well, so
not that I don't like guns. I love guns. Yeah. I just don't know. I can never afford one when I want one.
Well, I mean, a lot of people that will listen to this probably do not own guns yet and are wanting to get into guns. And I recall the places that I've gone, Lucas, a lot of the ranges, like the real ranges that have like host IDPA. I believe they were willing to like rent you firearms. So you didn't even need a gun to get started. Like you can go in there and like rent a firearm for, it's like $25 a match or whatever, you know, so people could get started with that even if they didn't own a firearm.
I haven't seen that in my area, but I would not doubt that it's a thing in certain places. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, a lot of the big ranges will do like firearm rentals. So why not, you know, why not rent one? Or, you know, if you have buddies, like some, you know, people have extra guns lying around. So usually if you have a friend that's a shooter, they want you to shoot with them. It's like, come on, let's go shooting. Yes. Like, yeah. I've never known someone like, no, don't come shooting with me, ever.
Yeah, I've been shooting plenty of times. I've never had my own weapon.
Yeah.
Usually shooting your stuff.
Well, and that's what I found is kind of the weird thing about the gun culture is most people think guns are cool. I found most people have a gun, but nobody talks about it. And it's the weirdest thing. I've done a series of blog posts on my website called Being Out as a Gun Guy. And so I work for a really large company, and I am like the token gun guy at work, and I'm open about it. I talk about it. And what I found is if people just kind of realize that you're just kind of a normal dude, and you're not all running around like my rats, you know, all the time. Yeah. Like if you're just kind of normal and you can have a conversation about people and not get mad at them, like they will come to you when they have questions. And it's been super cool over the past, you know, several years at my job where I have people just, I had a lady, you know, it was Christmas time and she's like, hey, my husband wants to get me a gun for Christmas. Like, what should he get me? Like, what should we do? I don't have one, but I'm interested and I'm worried about what I'll do if, you know, someone breaks into our house. And I'm like, oh, honey, let's sit down and have a talk. Like, oh, you came to the right guy. But she wouldn't have done that if, you know, if she didn't know that I was into guns and stuff. So.
Yeah. And
I think it's part of the stigma. I mean, because it's one of those things where there's, I mean, especially in the world we live in this day and age, there's so many people that are just so offended about everything.
Yeah.
You hit the right person who's like, oh, you have guns? Yeah, they're the ones that are going to start trouble for you.
Right.
I've come across very few of those people if I'm being just a normal dude, though. Like, if I'm just kind of like, hey, I'm a normal dude, these are the things that I like, and on the weekends I shoot gun competitions. I haven't had – I've probably had one or two people be like, ah, well, you shouldn't be allowed to have those. But, whatever. Like, there's always that guy, but I don't know.
Well, I'm fortunate enough I don't have to deal with that at my workplace. I mean, yeah, there's people that might not like guns. They never say anything about it. My boss, the owner of my building, walks around the damn building with a damn pistol tucked in his back.
I love that. Like, wish I could carry two work.
No, he gets out of the ranges and shoots all the damn time. Yeah. He loves guns. And, yeah, he wants everybody to know, yeah, you're not robbing my place.
Yeah. That is badass. As I say, yeah, I've noticed that if you will like respectfully answer people's questions and explain things, you do a lot more for the Second Amendment than like the ass clowns on the forums that are like, you said clip, you dumb bastard, you're wrong, and it's over. Yeah.
I think I tweeted something like that recently. It was like if you if somebody's interested in guns and you're like, it's a magazine, not a clip. Like, you're going to shut them down so fast. Like, just, whatever.
I think that just irritates
you. You know what they mean.
Yeah, exactly. You know exactly what they mean. Like, I think a couple years ago, I did a blog post on, what was it? The best thing you can do for the Second Amendment is to take a liberal shooting. Yeah. Like, hey, you want to go? Because I've met a lot of like really like liberal, gonna vote for Hillary Clinton, like super super liberal. And if I'm like, hey, I got some ammo, you want to come shooting with me on me? Like I'll pay for it. And they're like, yes, I do. You know, and once they enjoy, like once they you remove the fear and the mystery from firearms, you know, and let them enjoy, you know, shooting is fun. It, yeah, you've made a gun like advocate.
Well, and even if I take them shooting, and they still hold their stance, at least I can respect their stance a little bit more now that they're educated on it. Like if you have, you have a stance against something, but you've never experienced it and you don't know anything about it, I don't respect your opinion very much. But if you have some experience with it and you can are still articulate your argument, at least I'll have a little bit more mutual respect for you then.
You know, I actually have a very apt secondhand anecdote that goes right along with this. Lucas, are you familiar with Kevin Smith, a.k.a. Silent Bob?
Yes.
Okay. Well, his wife, Jennifer, for the entirety of the time he had known her, was a very anti-gun person, anti-firearm of any kind of person, until they made the movie Red State, in which point he puts her in the movie, and she has a scene where she's, well, shooting a damn Uzi, I think it is, or some kind of machine gun. I can't remember. Like I said, don't know that much. But as soon as she got that thing in her hand and blasted like a few hundred rounds, I mean, and they were using blanks and stuff, she came running to Kevin and was like, get me one of these now. Turned her mind around in basically just 2 hours worth of using a gun. She couldn't even tell you what these days. She couldn't even tell you why she was anti-gun in the first place.
Yeah, I've got it. I know a dude down here that is a competitive shooter now, and he grew up in New York, grew up in a household where they didn't have guns, and thought that they were, you know, quote unquote bad or whatever. Which I mean, they're, you know, they're just objects. They're not good or bad. They're just kind of amoral, I guess, is the correct word. And he. He went out to a range one time. I think it was like a Groupon or something he bought. And it was like, go to the shooting range and then get like 20% off a beer or something at the bar next to the range or whatever. So they, so like, he's like, well, whatever, go shoot guns and then grab a beer. So he did the Groupon thing. And then, you know, 6 months later, he's like an A-class competitive shooter. And I don't think he's made A-class yet, but he's a decent competitive shooter anyways. And it's like, yeah, that's all it takes. Just a little bit of education and people will come around.
Exactly. So this, I was thinking of questions and I'm like, what's one that's like argued on the internet? Like I thought about bringing up the whole storing magazines loaded versus empty. I've covered that pretty well. So dry fire training, do you think it's good or bad?
It is absolutely fundamental. I think you should.
What is dry fire training?
So dry fire is where you practice everything but shooting that goes along with shooting, right? So you can practice your draws. You can practice transitions. You can practice trigger pulls. You can do everything but the actual gun going off. We did an interview with my former co-host actually did an interview with a local grandmaster shooter. And he brought up a really interesting point in the interview that he said that dry fire – eliminates the distraction of live fire. So you can really focus on nailing those quick reloads, keeping the front sight where it needs to be without the distraction of the noise or the recoil of the gun actually going off. So yeah, I think personally, if you're a competitor or even if you're at all serious about concealed carry or self-defense, you know, your trigger pulls and dry fire should probably be 10 times more than what you do in live fire. So that's kind of my thought.
Do you use the plastic caps or you just dry fire and not worry? Some people like will worry about the pin. I've not ever worried about the pin. I do have some of those like plastic 9mm bullets just for like tactical reloads and stuff, but not because I'm worried about the pin at all.
So I use magazines loaded with dummy rounds. So I reload my own ammo, and so I just load up. I've probably got 100 rounds that are just a bullet shoved into a case with no primer and no powder in them. Okay. And I use those in my magazines. So that way when I'm doing my reload practice, my magazines weigh the same as they do in competition or in concealed carry. Cause it makes a big difference. The difference between a magazine with 10 rounds in it and an empty magazine is substantial.
Yeah.
So I do that. Generally I shoot a Glock. So what I do, I just pull the breech open a little bit. I shove a piece of cardboard between the barrel and the breech, and it just makes it so the trigger will kind of move back and forth a little bit. It doesn't like click like it actually like it's It doesn't click like you're actually like resetting the trigger each time, right. But it's good enough. And that's kind of how I dry fire practice most of the time. It's just kind of moving the trigger back and forth, practicing all the transitions and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, when I want to work on my recoil and stuff, that's what my range practice is for, is working on controlling the recoil and confirming all the things that I practiced in my dry fire practice.
Awesome. Did you have a question there, Mike, or did he explain it?
No, he pretty much explained it.
Yeah. I haven't done the, what you said using the brass. That's pretty clever actually. I may make some of those, but yeah, I bought like a cheap thing of like, just a plastic fake 9mm, which like you said, they won't weigh the same though. So that's something to keep in mind there. Have you used any of the like the training pistols? Like what is it, the CERT that fires a laser?
I haven't used the CERT. I actually just sold it about 2 days ago. The Cool Fire Trainer. Have you seen that thing?
I've not seen that one.
So it's actually It's actually really cool. It's a barrel that goes into your pistol, and the barrel has a small CO2 tank and a piston in it, uh-huh. And you can actually charge it up, and then when you pull the trigger on your gun, the striker hitting the piston on this thing actually cycles the slide. And
wow.
it's super cool. I played around with it in dry fire for a while, but I decided that I've kind of had the hots for this new microphone for a while for the podcast. And so I ended up selling it and spent a bunch of money on a new microphone the other day. But yeah, so it's really cool. I've used it. The reason I purchased it was really expensive was I have issues keeping a good, like tight grip on the gun, and I get lazy with that in dry fire, because when I'm dry firing, you know, it doesn't take much to hold the sights in place because there's no recoil. And right. So I bought this thing in order to add some recoil into my dry fire for a while and just really make sure I was practicing getting that good crushing grip on the gun. And it was super cool. It's got a little laser you can put on it, and it was a really cool addition to my dry fire. I liked it.
Off topic, what was the mic you got? Because your audio sounds really good.
Well, this is actually my old mic. This is a Audio Technica 2005.
Ah.
But I bought an Electro Voice RE320, which should be here on Monday.
Oh, nice. Yeah, our mic broke, and we haven't got a new mic. So we've been using just the laptop mic. Cause it works good enough, and it's at least good as, you know, audio in a car, right?
Sure.
but yeah, I've been like Googling microphone porn on Amazon, trying to decide what I want to get.
Microphone porn?
Microphone porn. Yeah. You can get like, I looked at one, I think this yesterday morning, it was like, wonder how good it was, the microphone that Tim Ferriss recommends. And I was like, well, I wonder how much this is. And it was like $4.99. I'm like, get off this page right now. I'm looking for something a lot cheaper.
So the Audio Technicas, I've been using these for what, almost 500 podcast episodes now. They're like $40. They do USB or XLR if you want to go analog. I've got a fleet of them. I've been using them forever. I've broken one, and I like them a lot. They sound really good.
Yeah, for $40, I may get that. I'm that's one of the ones I've looked at, I'm sure, because I've seen it recommended a lot, and that's a good price.
Yeah.
So let's see. So do you think new shooters can learn how to shoot on their own, or do they need professional training?
You can learn to shoot on your own. I just think depending on what your background is, training is not a bad thing. I have actually been accused of being anti-training in the past, and I am not. I just think that some people do too much training and they don't practice what they were taught. So if you go to a training class, that's not going to instantly make you better. It's going to teach you things. A good training class anyways, is going to teach you things that you can then work on and practice to become better. But if all you do is go to a training class and then, hey, that was fun, that was a fun day on the range, and you never work on the things that you were taught, it's not going to really probably help you that much. But I think most people probably, yes, can benefit from some training. So yeah, I think it's a good thing. And I think you can learn to shoot on your own too. Like, there are some really good competitive shooters. Like our current national champion for production division, he bought a pistol and was like, hey, this is cool, and I want to get good at this. And at his first match that he ever shot, classified as master.
Wow.
But that's not a natural ability thing. It's because he's one of these dudes that is super regimented in his practice. And he looked at what he needed to learn how to do, and he just smashed it in practice until he could do it, and then he went and made master.
Yeah. I've done both. I've done reading, and I've taken a few courses and classes here and there, and the classes have definitely helped correct some mistakes that I had and improve me. And so was the reading. Like you were just saying on the grip, like I used to not have that vice grip on my pistol. And I was reading an article by Masab Ayoud, I think, on just choking the hell out of your pistol. Like, I think the article said that to squeeze it as hard as you can until your arm starts to shake, and then back off until it stops. And that trick actually made a big improvement in my shooting.
Oh, yeah.
And I had not been told that at any of the training courses I went to. Like, but on the other hand, one of the training courses I went to, like, made the distinction that you're not – so in movies, they're always like, squeeze the trigger. And they're like, no, don't squeeze the trigger. Press it. Press it with your fingertip directly back until it shoots. And not like the Hollywood squeeze it. And that's the way I shoot this day. I press it back, and I shoot better than I did when I squeezed back. Hollywood.
Yeah. Do you mind if I plug another podcast real quick?
Go right ahead.
So do you guys ever listen to the American Warrior show with Mike Cieklander?
I have not.
Okay.
But I will look that up.
So he did an interview with Rob Latham, who's known as, in competitive shooting circles, the Great One. And Rob did a whole thing on there talking about trigger press. And he was talking about how, like, when you're shooting really fast, you're going to push the trigger a lot, or pull the trigger a lot differently than if you're just, shooting groups on the range. And he talked about how, like, you know what, when you're shooting really fast, you're going to be slapping the crap out of the trigger, and you just kind of have to learn how to slap the crap out of the trigger without disturbing the sight picture. And it was super interesting. And to hear that from somebody like him was really awesome. It was one of the very early episodes of the American Warrior podcast, which I would highly recommend, by the way. Great show.
I actually took a note, so I'm going to include that in the show notes, so people can check that out, which, everyone that's, I'm pretty sure that everyone that's ever shot, they'll try to line up their their shot picture, they'll try to make a good shot, and then, like, the man urge to just drop the magazine to just fire as fast as you can, it's irresistible, and you usually don't hit anything at all. So I can see that training to be able to shoot accurately while shooting fast, I see that being good.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what competition is speed, power, and accuracy is kind of the whole thing there. So it is very beneficial to be able to shoot quickly and accurately in both the competition context and as a concealed carrier or someone who has a gun around the house for self-defense. I mean, if it comes down to the time where you have to, justifiably shoot somebody in defense of your own life, if you have a pistol, chances are one round probably isn't going to do it. Pistols are notoriously bad for killing people. I read a statistic somewhere that said 85% of people shot with pistols live.
Which, I mean, is good if you get shot, but terrible if you try to protect yourself.
Yeah.
I saw something that was like,
you don't want to just piss off the guy that's trying to kill you.
No. Yeah, something like the average number of shots needed to actually incapacitate someone is like, it was like a weird number, like 9.6, it's an average or whatever, but it's a lot. Like, one is not going to do. Like, you need to probably empty your magazine.
I don't know if I would go that far, but you need to shoot until the threat stops, right? I mean, that's kind of the...
Yeah, exactly.
If just pulling your gun does it, great. If just reaching for your gun does it, great.
Yeah.
If you do have to pull the trigger, I mean, unfortunately, like, it's, you got to do what you got to do at that point.
Yeah. Once you pull the trigger, you're in for a penny, in for a pound at that point.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, I mean, I always hope that if I'm ever in a situation and I have to draw my gun, I hope that the act of drawing the gun will end it. Like, inherently, no one wants to be shot. So hopefully people are like, nope, screw it, I'm done. I'm prepared to, but I don't want to. You know, I don't think anyone, like, if you're mentally sane, I don't think anyone's like, yep, I want to shoot someone. So.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Reloading basics.
I love reloading.
You want me to ask a question, write a question. You just wrote reloading basics on there.
Yes. Tell us about how you would get into reloading, Lucas.
So, I'm notoriously a cheapskate, and so
awesome. So are we.
I try to do things as inexpensively as possible, as much as I can. So I started reloading about 2.5 years ago. So all I reload is 9mm. I don't load anything else. I don't do rifle. I don't do anything. All I load is the cheapest 9mm I can possibly load for competition. And so I started out with a really basic reloading press. I actually bought it used off a guy. It was a Lee turret press. So a lot of people will tell you, you have to start on a single stage press. And what I've learned with reloading, especially shooting in general, but reloading, especially, there's a ton of lore on the internet that is just patently false.
Yeah.
So I think a turret press is a really good value between speed and simplicity for somebody who's getting into reloading. And so you're only doing one operation at a time, but you're also can quickly change between operations where with a single stage press, you're not able to do anything quickly. So I started with just a Lee turret press. I bought a brass tumbler at Harbor Freight, the cheapest digital scale I could find. And that's kind of how I started. And just, you know, read on the internet, found a couple of reloading books, read a lot, asked a lot of questions to friends, and I still have 10 fingers. So it all worked out.
Yeah. Well, you said you're doing the cheapest reload you can for the matches, which I think is genius because ammo is fairly expensive. If your range allows it, like I said, the range that I was shooting at does not allow any reloaded ammunition at all.
Really?
Yeah. Well, there's sort of a fancy new one that they have this weird thing that collects the bullets at the end. Like it's weird. It tumbles them and collects them. I don't know. But they don't allow any reloaded ammo in their range at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't shoot there.
Yeah. I've not been back in a while. Well, right now, I usually, if I'm going to shoot, I'll just kind of shoot out the back door.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's nice until someone calls the cops because you're shooting Tannerite saying you have a tank back there, whatever it was.
We were shooting oxygen tanks.
Yeah. Don't try this at home, kids. You're not shooting oxygen tanks.
Somebody's setting off explosives down in the field.
Yeah.
Well, it did sound like a cannon going off. Did. I will say that much.
Yeah. I've been like lustily looking after reloading presses for years, and much like you, I'm a cheapskate, and I like to refine things down to the cheapest bang for my buck. Like, how can I get a decent quality product for spending the least amount of money? I mean, that was my philosophy when I started brewing beer. Like, how can I not pay the taxes and make a decent enough brew to drink cheap? You know, and I got that process down pretty streamlined. When I still drank and was brewing beer. Same thing with cider. Cider's super easy.
There's a saying down here. I'm in North Carolina, and there's a saying down here that is, you know how to ruin really good liquor? Tax it.
Huh. Do what was that?
Tax it.
Tax it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tennessee is pretty notorious for its moonshine as well. It's a fruit of the South here,
well,
yeah.
You know, technically, these used to be the same state.
Tennessee and North Carolina?
Tennessee and North Carolina. We share the border. We used to be the same state.
Yeah.
North Carolina owned all of Tennessee at one point before it got cut in half at the mountains.
Yeah.
All right.
Makes sense. Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's your lesson of the day. So you mentioned you're shooting with a Glock. What model? What are you shooting with?
I shoot competition with a 34, and I carry a Glock 19.
Glock 19 is what I had, and was super happy with it. Before the Glock 19, my very first handgun was what was it, a Smith & Wesson S40VE, 40 caliber handgun.
Yes.
What a piece of, like, I had so many jams with that thing. Like, every time I shot, like, every magazine, I was guaranteed one jam. Guaranteed. The Glock, I do not think I ever had a jam with it. Ever.
I mean, I've definitely had malfunctions with mine, but I shoot a lot more than most people do, I think. But yeah, the Smith & Wesson, the SD40VE and the SD9VE, they're not terrible pistols in my experience, but they're not good. I remember I was at the range years ago, and I was standing in the stall, the indoor range shooting, and there's this dude next to me, and I could see his target. And I mean, it looked like he was just like shooting it with a shotgun. Like there was holes in it everywhere. Wow. And he comes over, he taps me on the shoulder, and he's like, "Hey, you look like you're doing pretty good. Do you mind shooting my gun just to see if it's me or the gun?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah." And so I go over there, and like, I was able to shoot a little bit smaller group than him. And I don't remember which gun it was that he was shooting. It was some Smith & Wesson. But like, it was still like the size of a beach ball at like 15 yards. Like, it was a big giant group. And it's like, "Yeah, dude, I'm really sorry, but I think it's your gun." And he's like, "Oh man, you know, yeah. Do you want to shoot mine?"
Yes.
Yeah.
So have you done any modifications to it? There's like, lights and, who was it? I had a friend of mine that replaced his sights with the, what were they, the X sights, maybe?
The XS, the big dots?
Yeah, the big dots, which I don't know if I really liked it, but it was neat. It was a fun thing to shoot with.
I've messed around with them once or twice. I'm not a fan, personally. It seems like the dudes who like them, like, really like them.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally, I don't like them. So my 34, my competition gun, is pretty stock. It's got a little bit lighter trigger in it. So I've got a rule with Glocks. Like, I don't mess with any of the springs in the slide because that's where you ruin all your reliability. But it's got a heavier trigger spring in it. So the trigger's a little bit lighter. It's got a different connector in it. But other than that, it's got Dawson Precision adjustable sights and a grip plug. And I think that's it. But I shoot in production division, so I'm pretty limited in what I can do to it for competition as well. In my carry gun, same way. It's got a set of – I don't even remember who makes them, but just kind of a fiber, red fiber optic front, black rear sight, and a grip plug. And that's all I've done to that gun. That's it.
Yeah. I've never been a big fan of, like, super modifying your carry gun with all the I think you need to leave it like pretty much as stock as you can get. If, you know, like with a Glock, you pretty much have a reliable, good gun there. If you don't have a reliable, good gun, then you probably need to invest in a Glock.
There are a lot of really good guns out there these days. You know, I've messed around with the Smith & Wesson M&Ps. And so what happened was that I had a blog reader a few years ago tell me, "You need to stop badmouthing the M&Ps because you don't even have one and you've never shot one."
Yeah.
And so I was like, "Dude's got a point." So I went and bought one and played around with it for a while. And I cannot quantify to you why I like my Glock better. They're both fantastic guns. My M&P was stupidly, ridiculously accurate. I had a friend that shot it off a rest and did like a 2-inch group at 25 yards with it. Just using random like Winchester white box ammo. Like, it was a fantastic pistol, but for me, I just like the Glock more. And I think with most people, the "I just like it more" factor is really important. So I don't tell people, like, you have to buy a Glock, or you have to buy an M&P, or you have to buy a SIG. Like, if you like it and it works and you're not making excuses for it, rock on.
Yeah. I was actually like a hard convert to the Glock. Like, I really didn't want to like the Glocks.
Me too.
And after owning one, it just converted me. I was just like, okay, just reliability and accuracy. I was sold.
My first pistol was an XD and I broke it, or it broke, I guess.
Oh,
and, wow. And at the time you couldn't get like parts for them. You had to send it back to Smith & Wesson or to Springfield Armory. And they were super helpful. Like, yeah, hey, just box it up, send it back to us, whatever. But I had a match coming up in like a week. And I was like, I can't be without my gun. Can you just send me the extractor? And they're like, no, we can't send you the parts. And I was like, well, I guess I'm trading it in for a Glock. And I did, and I never, that's kind of where I've been ever since. So,
yeah, that's kind of ridiculous. They wouldn't just send you one.
They were weird about that back in the day. Nowadays you can get parts for them all over the place. And yeah. They've actually got a new one out, the XD Mod 2. I had a chance to shoot and review a bunch of those, a couple of them for my old part-time gig. And they're really nice pistols. I liked them a lot.
Nice. Yeah, there's a couple others that I liked, but yeah, I'll be trying to get a new Glock here soon. So what tactical gear do you recommend? I know you have a tactical gear that doesn't suck on your blog. So what's a couple of things that you actually like and recommend?
As far as like actual tactical gear, I don't have much. I'm not like a real tactical dude. So I don't own like a war belt and a plate carrier and all that stuff. I think as just like a regular citizen, like that's not really my thing.
No. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. I didn't want to bring someone on the show that's like, I have to have this for my main battle rifle. Like, you seem pretty down to earth. So yeah, I kind of wanted like that.
That stuff slays me. Like, you get dudes and they'll be like, you need to have a AR-15 in the back of your car with 30 magazines fully loaded at all times, or you're not tactical. And it's like, dude, shut up. Like,
yeah.
The idea that you're going to be somewhere and like Johnny Jihad is going to come out and like start shooting, and you're going to make it to your truck, get your rifle, and get it back in there and into the fight before a police officer shoots you in the face is just not, yeah. It's just not like real. So one of the things I do on my podcast is every week on the show is I talk about just a piece of gear that doesn't suck. And so I've got a thing on the website with a bunch of them, but I think one of the most overlooked things as far as shooting and people who want to get better at shooting is just a shot timer. Being able to know like exactly how fast you do things and track your progress is kind of a really big deal. So it was something I actually held off for years before I bought one. It's like, I don't need a shot timer. I don't need that. But it's been kind of the turning point in my shooting career is getting a shot timer and actually being able to know like, okay, I can draw the gun in 0.7 seconds and put one round on the target. I can do a turn and draw in, you know, 0.95 seconds and put one round on the target. Like that's the kind of thing that will really help you get better if shooting fast and accurately is kind of your thing. And some people it's not their thing, and that's fine too. A lot of people just like to go to the range and shoot at stuff, and I don't have any problem with that, but I'm trying to master the pistol right now. So yeah. A shot timer I think is a really good investment if you're looking to get better at doing things, whether you're a competitor or a concealed carrier or something too.
Have you checked out any of the shot timer or cell phone apps? Some of them I thought were pretty decent ish.
I have not had good luck with them using them with actual live fire.
Yeah.
But as far as like for dry fire, there's actually a guy, Dimitri, I think he's in the Ukraine, makes an app called Dry Fire Timer for iOS. And it's pretty fantastic, like for setting up par times for like your dry fire and stuff. But my old co-host was trying to write a dry fire app for Android. And that's what he does for a living. He's one of those super smart people and just had issues getting it to actually work accurately with the way that the system works and stuff. So I would say if you're serious about it, just, you know, save up the $100, buy a real shot timer. It'll definitely return your investment in the long haul.
Sounds good to me. We will wrap up with a fun question, because why not? So let's pretend that it's a zombie apocalypse. What gun would you pick for the zombie apocalypse? One gun.
Boy, I don't know. I guess the one I have is probably the one that I would pick, since it's what I've got. So it'd probably be, you know, some sort of plastic 9mm pistol, because I can load ammo for it. If it's a zombie, all you got to do is make a headshot. So it doesn't need to be super powerful. I mean, we see them do it all the time on The Walking Dead with like a screwdriver. So
yeah.
I don't know, probably some sort of very accurate 9mm pistol, maybe a Glock 34, you know, something that's accurate and reliable. And I'm kind of boring like that, man. I should have said like a minigun or a freaking tank. I don't know.
You know, incidentally, I have a fun fact about miniguns. You know what a minigun is, right?
Yeah.
Basically handheld Gatling gun. You do not require a permit for those. A permit does not exist for to own and use a minigun. Because there's so few of them, they never made a permit. So you can just buy one. If you can find somebody to sell, that'll sell you one, because they're all owned.
And they're like 10 grand, I think. Or
yeah,
more.
But you don't need a permit.
Yeah, well, sure you couldn't.
That is the couch potato couch tip for the week.
Yeah.
I think it would still be a fully auto, though. You would still need to have your...
Nope, no permits required.
Class 3.
I've looked into it. Yeah, no per... Yeah, it's like because there's so few of them made, and they're all owned, they don't... They just never made a permit for it, so...
Huh.
It's what it's the only permit-free, fully automatic weapon out there.
Not for new ones that are built, but only for that specific model, right?
Yeah, but they don't make many of them.
Yeah,
there's just no permit.
You mean like a you mean like a Gatling gun?
Yeah, like one of those handheld Gatling guns.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So a Gatling gun, the ones where you like turn the crank. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about the new
miniguns. The fully electric ones that you hold with both hands, and but brrr, like you find in some of the Grand Theft Auto games. Yeah, no permit required.
I'm going to need to look into that a little bit, because I'm not sure.
Oh, the M134 electric minigun. For $40,000, yeah, you can buy it without any kind of, wow. I mean, if you have $40,000, New York and California.
Yeah, if you buy it, yeah, you don't need a permit to own it.
I'll be damned. Uh-huh. Yeah, I literally just looked that up on air because I was like, that doesn't seem right.
And you doubted the couch potato.
And,
I know weird shit. That's my thing.
And you can own a grenade launcher. So there you go.
So the grenade launcher is going to be a destructive device. You have to get the ATF involved in that. But yeah, no, I'm pretty sure a minigun is going to require you to get all your class 3 stuff too, because it's going to be a fully auto, unless they made a semi-auto version that you could just like, you know, if you had to pull the trigger each time for one round. But if you only have to pull the trigger once and it's firing more than one round, the ATF is going to be very involved in that. Yeah.
Let's see. No, that's not it.
No, you're down there with a grenade launcher.
I see one here, fully transferable, which means it's under the NFA, $215,000. And, of course, you're going to have your Class 3 and all that stuff for that.
Yeah. This particular model just seems weird. I don't – whatever. Weird fact of the day. I don't really like, well, anyway, so that was it. That was all the questions. Tell people how they can find you.
Yeah. So you can find me at triangletactical.net or like .com. I own all the domains. They'll all take you to the same place, but yeah, Triangle Tactical is my podcast. I do the main show comes out on Mondays, which is about a half an hour long, just kind of a, you know, competitive shooting type show. And then Tuesday through Friday, I do the Triangle Tactical Q&A show where people send in questions, voicemails, and I play them and answer their questions. And if I don't know how to answer the question, I find somebody who can. So that's kind of what I do.
That's awesome. Definitely like your show. Like that you're still doing it and kicking it out. Yeah. So good job.
Thanks, man.
All right. So it's been great having you on, Lucas. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up, and this episode will come out on Wednesday.
Sounds good. I appreciate you having me.
All right, thanks for being on.
And somehow, miraculously, we ended up on time.
Yeah.
And on that bombshell, I guess it's time to end then. So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James Sicklin Burnett.
And that has been our guest, Lucas.